Thank you so much. I am so glad all of you think I'm here for you, because I'm actually here as the unofficial launch to my presidential campaign. So, no, not quite yet. It really is an honor and a pleasure to be here. Thank you so, so much for having me. I'm glad that I could make it also. We kind of got crazy amounts of snow in Scottsbluff the last couple days, so it was good to make it in. Great to be here with you this morning. And I definitely want to thank Carla, Julie, Yvonne, everyone else who was a huge part of bringing me here today. I really do appreciate your hard work in making this happen. Something that I just wanted to touch on this morning that I was asked to speak about is a little bit of my background and my experiences as Miss America, but then also kind of the opportunities that that afforded me to begin working as an agriculture advocate and the experiences and the things that I learned through the last couple years, just kind of understanding the disconnect that we generally have between the general public and the agriculture industry. So I guess, first of all, I wanted to hopefully share with you, just put it in a nutshell, I guess, my experience as Miss America, so you can kind of understand what that year was like for me. 365, of course, was the number of days that I spent as Miss America. Over 150,000 was the number of miles that I traveled that year. More than 180, the number of planes that I flew on over those 12 months. 36, the number of states that we visited that year. 5, the number of countries that I was able to go to. 8, the number of marriage proposals I received that year. Innumerable, the number of pictures I signed and autographs that I signed, pictures that I took. So many people ask for numbers on that, and I have no way to tally how many times those were. 17, of course, the age I was when I won Miss America. So that kind of began to give me the opportunity to serve as an ambassador of the younger generation, and also be understanding the kind of view that young people often have of agriculture in general. So some things that I found also that many people don't understand why agriculture as a whole is so important, I think has to do with some of these numbers. 7 billion is the world's current population. 925 million is the estimated number of hungry people in the world today. 925 million. And about 210,000. It's about 210,000 U.S. farms and ranches that are shouldering agriculture production in our country today. So there's really what we call a thin line standing between the safe, affordable, abundant food supply that we have today and total dependence on foreign countries. And what I've definitely seen is that most people don't understand that. They don't understand the importance of having a strong agricultural community and how much that affects our economy and just our country today. I think also what many people don't realize is the affordability of our food today. Many people complain about agriculture and the industry as a whole because of food prices. So many times we have these discussions all over the country about food prices. Well, only 9.5% of your disposable income as an American on average is spent on food. That's 9.5% of your disposable income, so after necessities, everything. The second country in the world that comes even close to that is Canada, and 16% of their disposable income is spent on food. So a lot of times when we're talking about the high cost of food, I think a lot of people don't understand how good we do have it in this country and how much that is directly tied to continuing to support domestic agriculture. So I think it's basically taking three things to continue to protect our thin line of agriculture in our country today. And one is going to be raising up a new generation of farmers and ranchers to take over the aging workforce of agriculture. And that's something that we often don't see is young people. You know, a lot of times I go to elementary schools talking and ask kids what they want to be when they grow up. Very rarely do you hear kids saying, oh, a farmer or a rancher. It's not something we're often training young people to do. Many times, if it's not in the family, it's just not something you ever consider. And even family farms and ranches, as many of us know, many of those aren't being passed down anymore because of the high cost. So something that I've definitely seen is continuing to focus on the young generation is going to be crucial in the next couple of years. But also educating and informing the public regarding agriculture as a whole. There are so many misconceptions and misinformation out there today. And this goes across the board from crop agriculture to animal agriculture, but especially, of course, in the beef industry. So many times media and societal attitudes are completely against agriculture. And so then I think that on the third side, it's going to be the political side, fighting like never before for strong agriculture policy, freeing up needless regulations, all of the things on the governmental side as well. And again, this applies to agriculture as a whole. A lot of times we kind of have commodity wars between crop and animal agriculture. I've been blessed to work with all different groups and to see that the problems and issues that we're facing really do go across the board. They apply to everyone. There are some differences, obviously, but in general, as we're talking about relating to the general public and governmental policy, oftentimes that's something that people can band together on. So to kind of understand a little bit of my background, as was mentioned, I grew up in Gearing, Nebraska, just a couple hours from here. I'm the middle of seven children and was homeschooled my whole life growing up. So being in the middle of seven kids, I announced at about 7 or 8 years old that I wanted to go to law school, and I was going to be a lawyer, judge, president, and a Supreme Court justice. And that was my plan till the day I died. I was going to be president for 4 to 8 years and then nominate myself to the Supreme Court and be there until I died. So that was the plan. But as you can imagine, the minute I announced to my dad that I was going to go to law school, being the middle of seven children, he explained very quickly that scholarships were going to be the way to do that. So I was always looking for scholarships, even when I first started high school. So that's actually how I first got started competing in the Miss America competition, was to earn scholarship money. And my parents had two big reasons why they continued to support my involvement, because it certainly wasn't something otherwise that they would have been interested in at all. And one definitely was the scholarships. At this point, I'm very blessed to say that my entire undergrad as well as part of law school is paid for because of the scholarships that I earned from Miss America. So that makes a big difference. I'm happy. My dad's very happy. So that was a huge reason for all of us. Then my parents had another reason, though. And in Miss America, you can compete from 17 to 24. Okay. I was planning on competing every single year until I was too old. So I started at 17 and was planning on competing for another 7 years. And it states that the rules of the competition state that you cannot be married during that time. So my parents found that as their security, I wouldn't be married until I was 25. So that sounded great to them. So that was another reason they kept on encouraging me to keep competing. But as I continued my involvement, and especially later as Miss Nebraska and then Miss America, I found some of my own reasons, of course, for continuing to be involved and why I loved this so much. And one of the huge things really was being able to have a platform and a microphone with which to speak about the things that I cared most about. Because prior to Miss Nebraska, and certainly prior to Miss America, I was just a 17-year-old from Nowheresville, Nebraska. You know, I'd say Gearing, Nebraska, anywhere outside of the state, and people would go, huh, where? So it was nothing. You know, I was not someone that people would listen to or would take seriously. And then all of a sudden, pretty much overnight, winning Miss America, people suddenly cared about my ideas and my passions and my thoughts. And so once I won Miss America, I realized this was an incredible opportunity to be a vocal advocate for agriculture. And so throughout my year, it was wonderful to be able to partner with various organizations. We did work with The Hand That Feeds Us in D.C., which is a coalition of various ag groups that does lobbying and public relations and things like that. Farm American. Just recently, I've been working on promoting the Great American Wheat Harvest documentary that will be released later this coming year. Various groups and projects, whether it's more on the media side or policy side, that once again I realized was such a great opportunity to be able to serve as a voice for people from my hometown, from my state, and just from the Midwest in general, or from rural areas in general. And that has been an incredible blessing and a privilege for sure. And again, I've continued to realize how much work we will have to do continually, that this will definitely never end for me, because for the rest of my life, I will continue to have to try to begin connecting rural and urban America, to connect the various generations, to give them the story and understanding of agriculture. And that's only going to become harder, you know, in the coming years. But I've also realized, of course, later on with an interest in politics, that that will be a huge opportunity as well, to continue to support agriculture and understand the issues there. So I definitely think that each of us, though, should have an emphasis on education and advocacy, because a lot of times what we see is that big disconnect, because those directly involved in the agriculture industry aren't connecting and engaging with young people or those in urban areas and large cities. So I think there's definitely some work to do there. What I've definitely seen is across the board, people have so many misunderstandings about where their food comes from, that not only that leads to the media being able to completely scare the entire population any way they want, because if they say something, people take it at face value because they don't have an understanding themselves. But I remember I was in, oh goodness, I think it was Iowa, on a dairy farm, talking to the farmer there who brings in school groups from all different schools around the state to tour the farm. And it wasn't a student that asked this, it was a teacher that asked, which cow does the soy milk come from? And I just thought, well, of course, that's an isolated example. Thought, okay, that's a teacher, there's a big problem. But then also just realizing that so many times people have these different ideas of what's healthy and unhealthy without even understanding where their food comes from or the background behind it. And that's something that we need to continue to fight to educate people and advocate for agriculture in general. I think that, of course, also leads to then people not taking for granted the food supply in this country that we're so blessed to have. We don't often understand the great privilege that that is and how much it actually affects our lives. Over the past couple years, I've been doing work in Haiti and Kenya, some other third world and developing countries, and you always see a direct correlation between the strength of the agriculture industry in that country and their overall economy in general. Many third world countries simply have no agriculture infrastructure. Developing nations are working on it, but there's always that direct correlation. So many people don't realize it's the backbone of our economy. A lot of times we have these discussions about supporting our economy, what we can do to make our economy healthier in the country, and we completely overlook, the general public completely overlooks that the agriculture industry is one of the main ways to do that. I think people see agriculture as a necessity for sure, but not as the privilege that it is. Economist Lowell Catlett explained that in 2004, the first camera was added to a cell phone. Okay, that was in 2004, relatively recently. So in the past 8 or so years, the average American's number of photos taken went up tenfold. In 8 years, the number of pictures that we take went tenfold because the camera was added to a cell phone. So the demand went up tenfold, yet one of the top 10 companies of the past 40 years for photography, the top 10 photography companies, one of them recently filed for bankruptcy. That's Kodak. Kodak was actually the first to invent the digital camera. So they used to be at the forefront of photography, the first to develop the digital camera, but then in just 8 years, all of a sudden they went bankrupt, even though people were taking 10 times more pictures than they were before. He explained that this kind of shows a picture of what happens when various industries can't keep up with changes. The demand may be there, but if we're not able to change with the consumer and also connect with consumers, there's a disconnect and a problem. And I think that is one of the main things in general that we can continue to do, is see how we might continue to make changes and always connect with the general public and with consumers. The problem, though, I think, is that it's not just the general public that don't understand agriculture, especially animal agriculture and the beef industry, but also politicians in general and our government. Some states have politicians that do understand directly, you know, what the state is dealing with, especially those that are primarily ag-based. But a lot of times, others have no idea what the industry is or what it entails or the things that go into it. And I guess I feel like I can make fun of politicians because I want to be one, so I give myself some leeway there. But I think we can all agree that our politicians sometimes make, silly laws. If you don't believe me, take California, for example, where it is a misdemeanor to shoot any kind of game from a moving vehicle unless the target is a whale. In Pacific Grove, California, molesting butterflies can result in a $500 fine. Also in California, it is illegal to set a mouse trap without a hunting license. In Georgia, in Quitman, Georgia, there is a law that states it is illegal for a chicken to cross a road. Also in Georgia, it is illegal to change the clothes on a storefront mannequin unless the shades are down. In Texas, there's a law that states it is illegal to shoot a buffalo from the second story of your hotel. Only in Texas. A recently passed anti-crime law in Texas requires criminals to give their victims 24 hours notice, either orally or in writing, and to explain the nature of the crime to be committed. Also in Texas, there's a law that states when two trains meet each other at a railroad crossing, each shall come to a full stop, and neither shall proceed until the other has gone. I'm blonde, and even I know that doesn't work. In Tennessee, it is illegal to use a lasso to catch a fish. I just thought it was impossible, but apparently it's illegal. In Tennessee, it's also illegal to gather and consume roadkill. In West Virginia, though, roadkill may be taken home for supper. In New York, the penalty for jumping off a building is death. Also in New York, New Yorkers cannot dissolve a marriage for irreconcilable differences unless they both agree to it. In Kentucky, it is illegal to remarry the same man four times. Not only is it just plain stupid, it's also illegal. In Kentucky, it's also illegal to carry a concealed weapon more than 6 feet long. Now, of course, I'll conveniently stop reading these before I get to Nebraska, where, by the way, it's illegal to hunt whales. And, okay, the real problem, of course, is that they start making ridiculous laws that apply to agriculture. So many times people are just shaking their heads, like, where do they come up with these things? But oftentimes many politicians and government officials in D.C. have no idea what agriculture is like, what is actually beneficial, what it's not. I'd like to give them the benefit of the doubt and say sometimes these ridiculous regulations that they put into place, they actually think are a good thing and they think are helping, but oftentimes they simply don't understand how ridiculous these things can be and how many times regulations on top of regulations on top of regulations can hurt things sometimes more than they do good. Of course, we're seeing things with the federal budget as well. Less than 0.25% of the federal budget is dedicated to agriculture, and that's everything, everything regarding food, et cetera. And yet, we're always trying to cut away from that tiny 0.25%. I mean, I'm the first person to be in favor of a limited budget, but goodness, with 0.25%, I think there's bigger things that we can be cutting from. I guess I'm seeing definitely that on the side of politics and government, it is so important to have vocal advocates who are directly from the industry to be explaining their story, their side of things, to help those people making those decisions understand what is most helpful and what's most beneficial. And that's definitely something that I hope to see more and more of, is that every single person here, every single person involved in agriculture in general, will continue to be very vocal and continue to be as involved and supportive of groups that do directly impact policy and legislation, because that will continue to be something extremely important. I think that protecting the thin line of modern agriculture is very important to to continue to move our country forward. We have the resources, the science, and everything necessary to feed the world's growing population if allowed to. And I think this fight is more than just us. It's more than just those who depend on agriculture as a lifestyle or an industry. It's more than just the rural populations. It's the world as a whole. It is about continuing to help others to be able to keep up with that growing demand and continuing to feed the world. I guess something that's become a little motto is not everybody farms, but everybody needs to eat. A lot of times the general public, especially in America, are the first people to start bashing farmers and ranchers and whoever else, but they're not the ones farming, but they're the ones eating. Every person has to eat, and that's why your industry affects literally every single person. I know that specifically, of course, in the beef industry, there are all sorts of different ideas out there, and a growing demographic of people, especially in America, that are continually against animal agriculture in general, and then especially cows and beef. It was so funny how many times during my year, and even to this day, people will always ask, are you vegetarian? And I'm like, I'm from Nebraska. It's illegal to be a vegetarian in Nebraska. They kick you out of the state if you don't eat steak. So I mean, with my background and where I'm from, and goodness, like you were saying, well, I don't know what side you're going to be on. When people say that, oftentimes I'm like, let's just put some things together. Homeschooled in western Nebraska, big family from a rural area, small town, you could probably consider which side of the aisle I'm on from that. But then I just leave it there, so you can come to your own conclusions. But I think that that's one thing, again, that is going to continually be important, is as there's more misunderstanding and more misinformation about animal products and about beef and all of those things, this is where it's crucial to keep on getting information out there, to be educating people, because so many times we really are just swayed by anything we hear, anything that our friend thinks, rather than science, rather than really good research and true information. And so many times you find people who are directly involved in the industry, farmers and ranchers, have so much great information, so much true research and science backing up what they're saying. But oftentimes that message isn't brought to a larger audience. And that's something that I think we can continue to work toward for sure. I think more than anything, I guess, today I just wanted to encourage all of you in what you're doing, because I know it's not easy, but we certainly appreciate it. Not only myself, but so many people in America appreciate what you do, and the passion that you have, because a lot of times people think, oh, an industry is just an industry, or your job is just your job, but I think that it's so much more than that. And I think that we should always be focused on a bigger picture, not just about the day-to-day, but understanding what an important role you actually have in the grand scheme of things and in just the entire food industry across the world, how each person here really does play such an important role. So I just wanted to share with you a poem called I Will Do More by William Ward. It says, I will do more than belong. I will participate. I will do more than care. I will help. I will do more than believe. I will practice. I will do more than be fair. I will be kind. I will do more than forgive. I will forget. I will do more than dream. I will work. I will do more than teach. I will inspire. I will do more than earn. I will enrich. I will do more than live, I will grow. I will do more than be friendly, I will be a friend. I will do more than be a citizen, I will be a patriot. It's about doing more, not being satisfied with good enough, striving to do more with the modern agriculture to provide my generation with the same safe, plentiful food supply we're so blessed to have today. Let's continue to focus on bridging the generational gap to continue to reach society in general and addressing the political realm, of course, as it regards to agriculture. So thank you so much for what you do, and thank you for having me here today.